Welcome to WebAx, practical web accessibility tips.
Hello and welcome to podcast number 57, Ajax and Accessibility, part 2. This is your host Dennis and I have Ross on the line.
Hey Dennis, how's it going?
Good. I guess first we give a shout out and a thank yous to the people who contributed to the WebAx 2-year anniversary episode.
Very good episode.
Yeah, so thanks to you and Mark McKay, Joel Dolson, Roger Johansson, Patrick Lauk, and Jared Smith for their contributions. And let's see, Roger Johansson even put a link on his site. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much. That's the 456BereaStreet.com that we always talk about. So it's nice that he mentioned us. He's got a lot of readers. So if you're listening to us for the first time because of that link, then stick around.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, this is part two, the Ajax and Accessibility episodes. And we're going to get a little more in the details about the how-to. The first episode I did with Mark McKay was more about a little bit on the how-to, but more just like what it is and some links and some ideas about it and some problems. But first, we do have several news and announcements to get into. So let's get to it.
So it looks like there's some news on the National Federation of the Blind versus Target front.
There sure is. Let's see. This was, I think, just Thursday, a few days ago.
So the judge rules to go ahead?
Yeah, the judge ruled, it's not a final decision or anything, but the judge ruled that the court case is acceptable and that they can create a class action lawsuit. So any people out there that are blind or I'm not sure if you have to be how blind you have to be or visually impaired can join in the lawsuit against Target because their website was not accessible at all. It was pretty bad. The other part of the decision was even though Target had modified or fixed some of the issues with his website, Target applied to dismiss the case because they had fixed some of their site. Well, the judge ruled against that argument because, you know, the damage has already been done. It's not like you could run out to the store and rob them, and then if you get caught, give them money back, you know, and things are all okay. You still have to face your penalty and go to jail or whatever.
Yeah, imagine that.
Okay, All Flash, No Standards.
Yeah, this is an article I saw over at graphicpush.com, which is a good blog, but it kind of talks about how every year the Communication Arts Interactive Annuals, where they're basically awarding companies for good site design, good web designer, you know, that sort of thing, is like 90% Flash, which kind of sucks.
Huh.
And those that aren't Flash, most of them are hybrids of Flash and standards, and a lot of them are table-based too. So pretty crappy that some of the most inaccessible non-standard-based sites are the ones that are getting all the fame and fortune. So.
Yeah, that's interesting. Because I know a lot of web designers, you know, and even Flash gurus, you know, kind of non-biased or non-partial towards Flash. So that's graphicpush.com that article was on.
Yeah, and I get the impression that, you know, the judges who are awarding these sites probably are not the same ones who are developing sites in their spare time. It seems like it's more of a looking at it from a marketing angle or that kind of angle, which still, you know, I mean, you should look at load times and accessibility and standards and that sort of thing too, at least in my opinion.
Right. So it sounds like the people judging that really like animation.
Yeah, probably. Who is the best online movie?
Okay, and you found something on web form design?
Yeah, it was just kind of a cool little article called Web Form Design in the Wild, and it talks a little bit about you know, how to design forms in a way that are easy to use and make sense. You know, a lot of people tend to neglect their forms, and this isn't so much for screener situations, but just, you know, being able to tab through and make sure everything's usable and easy to use. So it's a pretty good article. It's worth looking into and worth putting more time into your forms.
Excellent. Let's see, now some announcements. We've already mentioned the 2-year episode, and let's see what we got here. Oh yeah, I bought a motorcycle a few weeks back.
You had a new toy.
Yeah, a new toy. But I had to get rid of my Mustang though. I totally downgraded on my car, and I got a little 2-door Focus.
Well, you got the practical, and then you've got the fun. So
yeah, that works out. I still have some fun. But the Focus is pretty neat. It's a little zippy car, and it gets really good gas mileage, like a motorcycle. So
yeah, how much does the motorcycle get? I remember you told me, but
it's been getting between like 60 and 80 miles to the gallon.
Not bad. Yeah, for gas prices these days, that's not bad at all.
Yeah, well, it's just a little 250, but, you know, I could still go 70, 75 on the highway if I wanted to, so.
Yeah. Well, you'll have to get some pictures of you and all your leather gear riding in the Hells Angels.
Put it up right there. Yeah, I got to get some pictures. Yeah. That'd be hilarious.
Accessibility Angel or something. Find some more people with motorcycles.
But I opted not taking it up to San Francisco Thursday and Friday. I did end up spending one night in a hotel room Thursday night in downtown San Francisco. That was pretty cool. An event apart was going on, and so that was pretty exciting. And I got to briefly speak with a few legendary folks. I know we talk about Joe Clark a lot. I introduce myself to him.
Oh, cool.
And so that was interesting.
Did he remember commenting?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I said, hey, I'm Dennis, you know, from WebEx, you know, the accessibility podcast. And the first thing he said was, oh, so you don't look so short up on the internet. Oh, Joe Clark, what are we going to do?
So, is he going to come by for an interview sometime? Or I guess not come by, but hop on Skype.
You know, I didn't even get around to asking him that. I didn't talk to him very long. He gave a presentation on captioning and the problems of online captioning, and there was a lot of criticism all the different methods that there are to caption, and nobody does it right, you know, and all captioning, all the different examples, and how and why captioning is a problem. But unfortunately, he didn't really provide a solution, because in his view, there really is no solution. So, so everybody was like, that was a little bit of a downer, but
yeah, I guess technology just isn't there yet, or
well, there's just no standard on it, you know.
Yeah,
and I think that's what he's trying to work toward.
Gotcha.
And when I first got to the conference, I sat next to Jeffrey Zeldman.
Oh, Zeldman, yeah, that's a
pretty big name. Know it was just some guy and some girl, and there was an empty seat in between, so I sat down. And he's a really nice guy.
Yeah,
and yeah, and he's just as short as I am, so that made me feel better. After what Joe Clark said. No. he was a really nice guy. So,
you talked to him much?
Yeah, I talked to him. I gave him my WebEx card.
All right.
I sent him to a couple links. I emailed him a couple links that we were talking about. The ACID 2 web standards browser test.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. Who else did I talk to? I talked to Eric Meyer just for a few minutes.
Oh, very cool. Wow, you met some big hitters there.
Yeah, I talked to him for a couple minutes. He's a really nice guy, too, and I was inquiring about my article that I submitted to A List Apart, and so he said it's still under consideration. I submitted an article, email spam bot buster, and some problems and a solution to, avoid spam bots, robots from going out on the spidering the web and grabbing all the emails on the websites and spamming them.
Yeah, I had a chance to read it. It's very good. So they should.
Ross reviewed it for me. And see, the thing is, I can't publish it anywhere until I get an answer back from A List Apart, because you're not allowed to publish your article anywhere else.
Yeah.
If you want it published there, which makes sense.
Yeah. So, but they definitely should run it, because it's a good article and something I'd never even considered. I was like, wow.
Oh yeah. Yeah, Eric Meyer said, he's like, well, I've actually been using that technique for a little while, but, you know, nobody's written an article on it. So.
Oh, cool.
So, you know, hopefully. But, I mean, because it uses, like, an unobtrusive JavaScript, you know, solution, and then it uses, like, you know, as a fallback, just, like, the regular text masking, email masking, like, if you do WebEx, hyphen, hyphen, at, hyphen, hyphen, gmail.com, uses that as like a backup. But he said, I guess apparently some spam bots out there are coming close to being able to interpret JavaScript.
Ooh.
Yeah, so all the solutions that you've been writing on the websites for blocking out spam bots with JavaScript might be ineffective, but that hasn't happened yet, so we'll see.
Yeah, well, I hope not.
Yeah. So cool. Anyways... Yeah, and that's, of course, an accessible solution because it's using unobtrusive JavaScript and it's using the that other method as a fallback for if you don't have JavaScript. So,
excellent.
All right, well, let's move on. ARB Camp?
Yeah, this is actually happening in Ann Arbor. It's closely modeled after the Bar Camp model, where it's kind of people interested in social media and technology and web design and marketing, all kind of meet in one place, and anybody has an opportunity to present on what they want to present, and then you just go to whatever sounds good. And so we're running that in Ann Arbor, so anybody who's nearby should definitely check it out, and you can learn a little bit more about it at arbcamp.org. It's $15 for the whole day, and you get food and get to meet everybody, and there's a keynote speaker, and... books that you can get from him if you want to pay to go to the keynote. So, should be good stuff.
Sounds good. Sounds like a great deal.
Yep.
All right, let's move on to the main portion of our episode.
Yep, which is, again, AJAX and accessibility.
Part two.
Yeah.
So, we have AJAX. Asynchronous JavaScript and XML, which we know is a misnomer now because I don't think hardly anybody uses XML with it. you could use any kind of data.
Yeah.
And we all know it's very cool, and you can get instantaneous results on your page without refreshing and all that jazz.
Yeah, I guess big use nowadays is to make websites act more like desktop applications. You know, everybody. Mm. You want to have these rich applications on the web, but you don't want it to have a billion page refreshes to do anything. So that's the goal. But
yeah, and the problems.
Yeah, there are some problems.
So yeah, the problems are number one, if you don't have JavaScript, and number two, if you have JavaScript and you're using a screen reader or some other kind of alternate reading device, then you're unaware of... Uh-oh, there goes my younger one again. The other problem is if If you have JavaScript and you're using a screen reader or some other kind of device, then you may have an issue. Well, you probably will have an issue of what's updated and where on the page it's updated.
Yeah. So if something's changed, maybe the screen reader supports it, but how do you know where that's been changed? It's not like you're looking at the screen and you can just see that something's different.
Exactly. Let's see. So, all right. Without JavaScript, the problem is, can people still use the site? And let's see. I'm trying to go through your notes here. obviously, no content's gonna load if you're just using doing the Ajax the regular way. And must you use an alternative version?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like people have been suggesting for a while that, oh, we can have an alternative version, but that seems like a pretty poor way to go about it. Yeah, I mean, it's just a whole bunch of extra work. Why duplicate it all when there's better solutions, which we'll kind of go into. So,
okay,
those are the problems.
Okay, so let's get to the solutions.
Yep.
I guess, one solution is, now I guess we're assuming that, that they have JavaScript enabled and Ajax is running, then how do you notify a screen reader of updated content? And I guess there's been, several methods proposed out there, and
So the JavaScript alert, is that kind of the first thing that people started doing?
Yeah, I mean, that was the first obvious suggestion. Just by adding a regular JavaScript alert on the page, with a message saying, which portion of the content has changed.
So then conceivably, someone with a screen reader would navigate to that portion, and then they could read the difference.
Right. They would get that message because JavaScript alerts work with screen readers, and then navigate to that message. Although, a lot of these solutions we're going to propose aren't really, standard, and not everybody's doing them because most of them don't work, at least throughout all, browsers and screen reader types and stuff. This solution that we just talked about, just a simple JavaScript pop-up, apparently, according to SitePoint, they've tested it, and in Windows Eyes 5.0, that doesn't even work.
Yeah.
You think it would be the most basic, easy thing,
Yeah, just run an alert. I mean, you would think that would work.
But, in the usability, on the usability side, obviously it's a pretty dorky solution.
Yeah.
And cumbersome, and...
So, yeah, that's one thing I worried about. Is there some way to have the alert so that those with the screen reader would hear it, but everybody else, you don't want to have to click OK every time something changes.
Yeah. Yeah, pages nowadays, especially web applications have, multiple instances of Ajax going on.
Yeah.
And if it's used often, like you said, you have to press okay.
Yeah.
That would get a little nuts.
Yeah, so it kind of solves one problem but creates another.
Yeah. Another solution I came from, I found, was dynamically adding a message directly beneath the trigger element. So after the trigger element and before your content has changed, you add a message there. And that seems to be a pretty good solution also. But apparently there's issues with that too. And I'm citing the SitePoint article that we'll put a link to on the podcast. It's really good. Ajax and screen readers, when can it work?
Yeah.
And the other article that Ross and I went through is Making Ajax Work with Screen Readers by Juicy Studio. I'll put a link to that too.
Yeah. So then there's a whole other kind of effort to have the screen reader jump to what's been changed after it changes. And that's a lot about a lot of Ajax and screen readers winking at work. That article goes over the different methods. And it seems like all their testing, they can find, you know, instances where it'll work on one or two screen readers, but none of them work on it all. So,
right, that's in that in the SitePoint article kind of came to the same conclusions. They have different solutions,
yeah.
But they don't. No solution works in all the different browsers and screen readers and
yeah.
stuff, which I guess is a pretty frustrating thing, kind of like Joe Clark with his online
campaign. Yeah. Yeah. So they're trying things as far as giving IDs to some of the Ajax content that will change, and then using JavaScript to change the document location to that ID, and, you know, that would work for some. And they ran into things where maybe it'd read the paragraph that it changed, which is good, but then it'd continue to read the whole document, which you don't necessarily want to do either.
Mm.
And
yeah, I didn't quite get that solution. Use the document, right?
The document location?
Or document location.
Yeah, so they gave an ID to, like, a paragraph called response, and then they set the document location to response after response had been changed through inner HTML.
What's the difference between that and in focus? Like, why would they do that rather than focus?
Well, the problem with focus is in HTML and XHTML spec right now, the only focus only works on interface elements like forms or anchors.
So it's not in the spec? That was
yeah, and I think that, you know,
because it worked for me. when I ran their tests at the end of the Juicy Studio article, they have some tests with, like, three of their main solutions. I mean, at least on my Firefox, it worked.
Yeah, well, Juicy Studio came up with a different method, and maybe this is a solution that the SitePoint hadn't found. But essentially, they're using Tab Index, because you can focus with Tab Index. And so they're giving an element that they're going to want to use for JavaScript a -1 Tab Index, because then it's not going to be part of the natural Tab Index. If you're tabbing through, it starts at 0 and goes up. But you can still use it for focus. So that seemed, from what I've read and kind of tested out, that seemed like a pretty viable solution.
Yeah.
It seemed like it's working on the different screen readers that they had tried.
So negative tab index plus a JavaScript.
Yeah,
focus.
And that seems to be a good way that, you know, something changes and you can jump the screen reader to the portion of the document that has changed.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's a good solution for, at least for right now, when the user has JavaScript enabled. But what if the user doesn't have JavaScript enabled? I guess the best solution right now is something called Hijax, which I'm not sure if the term was actually coined by Jeremy Keith, but he probably is, at least to me, because he's the one that's written a lot about it, and it makes a lot of sense. And basically, he's using the idea of progressive enhancement and starting with plain old, you know, server-side refreshing pages for your database calls and updating content, and then using progressive enhancement, enhancing the behavior by using unobtrusive JavaScript, and you basically intercept the behavior of the form or the link or whatever that you're using Ajax with, and you're intercepting that and stopping it, and then you're adding on the Ajax instead.
Yeah, so basically you start, I mean, if you want to break it down to something super simple, let's say you've got a contact form. You write it and code it and do the server side as if there's no Ajax whatsoever. So submitting it would submit it to, you know, maybe a PHP call or script. And then if you do have JavaScript enabled, essentially it goes through and it hijacks that submit and instead...
it returns false on that.
On the onclick, right? I believe it is. And instead calls a JavaScript function to perform the AJAX. And you know, he recommends that you keep it all modular so you don't have to have kind of two sets of codes. You know, you call different functions. But it's kind of a great way because there's no, intrusive JavaScript. It works without JavaScript, and you still get your fun little AJAX enhancements.
Exactly. Yeah, I really like this method because it uses unobtrusive JavaScript, you know, and the idea of progressive enhancement, and it's just clean and it works, and it works for those with JavaScript and those without JavaScript.
Yeah. And even as basic, if you want to load some content into a page, the idea is that if you have your link, it would still link to a document, an HTML document. So if you didn't have JavaScript, it almost look and act exactly the same. But when you have AJAX, it kind of returns false on that click, and then instead calls the AJAX function, which loads the content into the page. So, and I've used that on a few sites before, and it works really well.
Cool. And I just realized that if you do that, that's awesome, but if you're... Just keep in mind that, if your user... is using a screen reader and has JavaScript, that you still want to do the other solution that we talked about.
Yeah, they kind of have to go hand in hand.
Yeah, so ideally, you can do both.
And this actually has a benefit from a SEO standpoint, too, because obviously any content that you load into the page, any search engine like Google can't perform those JavaScript and get to that content. So it's kind of a way for the spiders to see your content as well.
So in a worst case scenario, if you're unable to do those the two solutions we've mentioned, you can always do an alternative page.
Yeah, which is not very highly looked at nowadays, but it's better than doing nothing. If for whatever reason something comes up that you can't do these methods,
yeah, it'll be more work, and it's not a highly regarded method, but I guess it could be effective. It's just you can be duplicating content.
It's better than nothing, but ideally, you want to use these other methods. If for whatever reason testing shows that it's just not accessible, some screen readers just aren't cooperating, this would work.
Yeah, how do you use an alternative page? I guess there's different methods of that too, actually, that we could talk about for a minute. One way is like maybe not a NoScript tag or just like some kind of link that displays that says if you don't have JavaScript or whatever, then go here.
Yeah, you could put that right with your low vision, links up the top that people tend to use. Don't have JavaScript, use this. And then if you've got a site that's kind of database driven, it wouldn't be too hard to at least keep the content updated equally. And it's not like you have to go through each page and update it twice.
What do you think about this solution? Because in my day job, they're starting to do this, which really bugs me. But it is an online application, so when somebody logs in, they flag... whether the user has JavaScript or not. So depending on that, that flag is set and it's not changed until they log out again. So if the user logs in and they don't have JavaScript, then in the, because all the pages are served up with Java, it's JSP.
Oh, okay.
So all the pages after you log in, if you don't have JavaScript enabled, will write out server-side write-outs of specific content, depending if you have JavaScript or not. So that's another solution, but I don't know. It just kind of makes me nervous doing it that way.
Yeah, I think
it's like an all or nothing.
Yeah, I mean, it tends to probably work as far as those who have some sort of confirmation that there's JavaScript, but if you go to, you know, somebody using a screen reader that has JavaScript support, but if they don't do anything else, you know, you're going to run into that same problem where something changes and they don't know it.
That's a good point. Very good point. I'll make that point at work. pretend like I thought of that. That's an excellent point. That's what kind of what we were just discussing.
Yeah, exactly.
So even if they have JavaScript, they could be still using a screen reader.
Yeah.
So they wouldn't be, yeah, and those special alerts and everything wouldn't be there for them.
Yeah, definitely. And there's always the possibility that while using the site, somebody turns on or off JavaScript, although it's probably pretty low.
Yeah, I think at least right now they're kind of dismissing that.
Yeah, it's probably such a low percentage, it's, you know, is it really worth...
Yeah, but the first point that you made, that's probably a much better argument in the business case.
Yeah.
You know, rather than somebody turning on and off JavaScript, but although it is possible.
Yep. So what's the future of Ajax? It seems like it's kind of, doesn't seem like it's going anywhere. You know, it's kind of where the web wants to go as far as capabilities. What can we do to make sure that it doesn't make the web inaccessible?
Good question. I guess keep on talking about it and implementing these techniques, making them more, you know, standard. Well, JAWS might have a solution.
Yeah, I've heard about this. So JAWS might be, the next version might be Ajax friendly.
So that'll be interesting.
Yeah.
I also saw an article, and I don't remember it offhand. I'll try to dig it up. They were saying that Ajax is a fad, and that, I mean, it's never going to go away, but they said, you know, it probably won't get any more popular than it is now. It may even get less popular, that it's kind of faddish. So that's an interesting perspective, and I think there might be a little truth to that, but, I mean, in general, obviously, it's still going to be very popular on the web, so...
Yeah, I mean, I can see now there's probably times where people are using it when they don't really need to. But as far as the online application sort of trend versus desktop application, it ends up speeding things up so much if you can use it.
Yeah. I guess I gotta agree, it is a lot more user-friendly, you know, when used in the right places. Obviously, there's instances out there when people use the Ajax just for the heck of it, and which is,
yeah, just because it's cool,
pretty lame.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess that's a point there, is don't use it if you don't have to or it doesn't add to the user experience.
Yeah, exactly. So hopefully screen reader technology will continue to improve, and that will help support it.
Yeah, but I mean, for now, and I think in the next at least several years, I mean, I think the Ajax method is really going to be important, and that hopefully, you know, developers will start to understand that, you know, this idea of progressive enhancement, and you need to create a page that just works and then add and then enhance, you know, the behavior after, rather than the other way around and try to retrofit everything like I'm trying to do at my day job. So.
Exactly.
Yeah, they don't really understand these Java programmers in India, man.
Yeah.
They don't understand. They know how to program Java really well, but it's like pulling teeth, you know, trying to teach them this idea of progressive enhancement. They're not getting it yet. So.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it's hard to really describe the importance if people don't realize what percentage of people are affected by it, even when there isn't kind of a language barrier. So,
yeah. Well, one of the major clients is a very, very large bank, and they're starting to, you know, to be concerned with the law, and and getting sued, and they want to make the web application, you know, the Well, they're buying the package from us, web application. So they, when we do the co-branding and all that jazz, they want to make sure it's 508 compliant and ADA compliant. And we're in California too, and that's what the NFB versus Target lawsuit. Not only are they talking about the ADA, the American Disabilities Act, but they're referencing two California laws.
Yeah.
That specifically talk about, you know, web accessibility in for any site for what is it? Like a public sector commerce site or something like that in California. So.
Yeah. So it's major stuff.
Yeah. Well, my kids are screaming and your phone's ringing, so I guess we guess we better call that a day.
Yeah. Yep,
so podcast 57, yeah, Ajax and Accessibility Part 2.
Make sure you use your Ajax correctly.
And check out the links that we'll post on webax.blogspot.com. Thanks for listening.
Yep, bye.
The WebAx blog and podcast is located at webax.blogspot.com, webaxe.blogspot.com. Email WebAx at webax@gmail.com, webaxe@gmail.com. To leave a voice message, call 206-203-0585. WebAx is sponsored by Check Engine USA, website tune-ups and overhauls, www.checkengineusa.com.